Welcome to the Driving Force Podcast, a podcast for new and aspiring leaders within the transportation and logistics industry. I'm your host, AP, and along with Matt Loggins, we have over 20 years of combined experience within the transportation and logistics industry. But more importantly, we're young, hungry, and nimble, and we've used that to our advantage to navigate, advance, and grow in an ever-changing industry. So without further ado, here is the Driving Force Podcast.
Welcome to the Driving Force Podcast. We're really excited about today's guest. David Massover graduated from Humboldt State University with a bachelor's in social sciences, and he has been in sales for the past 30 years. He's going to give a lot of great insights and tips to our audience today.
Yeah, so Matt, today we're going to be diving into sales.
Yeah, so David Massover, he is the host of the Driving B2B Sales Revenue Podcast. His journey, his experiences, I think, valuable lessons for our audience. We're happy to have you.
Thanks, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to chat today, Dave.
So let's get started, Dave. Walk us through your journey into sales, the learning curve that went into that. Can you kind of give us a broad overview of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when people ask me about how I got into sales, I usually start by telling them that it was back in 1991. And everybody groans because they think it's going to be a very long story. But actually, I'll keep it short. But the way that I got into sales was rough. And I think it's really typical. My first sales job, I got 2 days of product training on a strict commodity product, pure product training. And then it was like, there's your desk, there's your phone. Good luck. Like that was it. So it was a really rough start, and nobody in my family had been in sales before. So I was just completely on my own. I'm sitting there in this open office, listening to the people around me, having these really fun conversations, laughing and joking. And then at the end, they'd be writing up orders. And I'm like, how do you do that? Like where do you even start with that? So it was a pretty rough start.
No, and I could see how not having any support, right? No mentors to speak of, nobody in your family, no friends, family, nobody. It's just you. So that can be kind of a dark place to kind of start your career. You're like, where do I go from here?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, now, you know, several years later, decades later, you know, Simon Sinek had a big impact on all of us. And I think about what's my why. And I go back to that moment staring at that desk, and it's a bad feeling. And, you know, I'm lucky because I'm stubborn, and I'm like, I am not going to let this sales thing beat me. You know, and you were asking about mentors. Like, there were no mentors there. There were a couple of nice people. You know, the person next to me would stand up every once in a while when I'm in the middle of a call and like try to coach me as I'm on the phone with somebody, which was very thoughtful, but not at all helpful.
Helpful, right?
But something really cool happened, because one of the other people there, you know, she was quiet. She was like one of these like quiet, disciplined, but super effective salespeople. She took pity on me. And this one day she came in and she gave me Brian Tracy's Psychology of Selling on cassette tape. That's how long ago it was.
Hey, there you go. But, that's a classic.
I didn't know that this kind of a thing existed until then. Right. So it opened up this whole world for me. It's like, wow, there's people who talk about this and write about this. And, you know, then I looked into Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar and Jack Canfield and Stephen Covey. And, you know, those guys became my mentors. And then it was just about taking those principles and applying it to what I was doing at that particular time. But that basic approach of take a concept, apply it to what you're doing, look at what you're doing and find the concept. That basic approach has been working well for me for 30 years in a lot of different capacities.
Yeah, awesome. So talk a little bit about that as far as, you know, the trial and error of figuring out what really works for you, which what fits your, you know, down to your biorhythms, right? Because, I mean, there are certain things that people have taught that just don't fit certain mentalities or certain, you know, personality types.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think ultimately you have to experiment. But I think it's not just experimenting. I think there's, you know, you kind of have to rotate in between thinking about what you're doing and then trying to find some resource. Maybe it's the person next to you. Maybe it's something you read. You know, could be anything. Doesn't really matter. And then you need to try it. For me, what was really great, the thinking about it part, really staring at that phone, listening to the people joking, not knowing what to do. There was this big thing called getting sales, and I didn't know how to do that. But maybe it's just unique to my personality. The way I tell the story now is to remedy that, I invented the sales process. Now, I know that somebody else had done it, you know, long before and much better, and all, but I didn't know that then. So I invented the sales process. And what I mean by that is I just said, listen, I don't know how to get a sale, but I can break down the little pieces, right? You know, who should I be calling and where am I going to find them? And what should I say when we first start talking? And if they let me continue, what should I say after that? And what do I need to learn? And, you know, so you, like, you take all these little pieces and put them together. And to answer your question, once you start looking at it that way, then it's like, I don't have to learn how to sell, but I can figure out, like, how can I target better? Or how can I research better? Or how can I call better? Or how can I, you know, open better? Or how can I probe better? Or, you know, so handling those little pieces with experimentation is a lot easier than trying to take on the whole big thing. You know, that wasn't a very elegant way of expressing it, but I think you guys understand what I mean.
No, yeah, it could be overwhelming, I would think, to try to tackle everything all at once instead of, like you said, break it down to be able to understand each individual piece that kind of goes along with that. So,
yeah, because that's what I tried at first, right? Like, I want to find somebody to tell me how to do the whole thing. And I quickly realized, like, that just doesn't work because, right. You know, especially because it wasn't a mentor. It's not like I had a sales manager who said, listen, I did it this way. You should try this. Because even that doesn't work, but right. You're closer. But when you're listening to Brian Tracy, right, he is talking to a lot of people and you got to figure out how to apply that to yourself. And I think that ultimately that's the art, because even if you're learning from the person next to you or the person you report to, you've got your own style. You've got your own personality. You've got your own strengths and weaknesses. You know, sales is really about taking these core principles and these ideas and figuring out how to make them work for you.
So I'm curious, you know, from the time you started in 1991, when was your first sale, and did the pressure of being in sales, but still yet trying to learn the process that you were developing, did those things ever meet and intersect and overlap, and you had to make decisions on whether it's a shortcut in a process to get a sale or at least further the sale, or you were sticking to, hey, this is going to be a process for me that I have to learn, that I have to adapt and mold into?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So I had a couple of jobs early on for, there were some personal things going on in my life that, you know, kind of cut that first job short, which I wasn't really unhappy about. Mm-hmm. And then I tried something kind of interesting that was involved in sales. And then I got what I call my first real sales job. And what was cool is that I'd had those first two experiences. And I never really felt like I got it figured out. But at least I understood what it was I was supposed to be working on. So I had the framework. And then when I got into that third job, which was actually, you know, probably less than a year after I got that first job, I just really had a structure in my mind about what I needed to do. And then it was just about figuring out how I needed to do it. And I remember I was selling promotional products, which is, you know, all that stuff that your company puts logos on for trade shows and employee spiffs and stuff like that. And, you know, I remember trying to figure out who I'm supposed to call. And I remember I was working in California, and they had this thing called the Riches Guide. Anyone in Northern California who's as old as me probably remembers the Riches Guide. And it was basically just a list of every company by company code and, you know, what's their revenue and what's their employee count. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to call the biggest companies because they've got the most money. That didn't really work very well. And then I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to look in the newspaper and see all the people that just got promoted into a job and see if I can get into a conversation with them. And that didn't work very well. And, you know, I kind of feel like the dumbest kid on the block, but eventually I figured out, well, you know, people use these for trade shows, and trade shows have deadlines, and I can find trade shows on the internet. So if I can back out 3 months, then I can, you know, call up with a reason to call. You're going to the XYZ show. and you know, you might need this stuff and I can help you. And my career took off. And you know, it was just like, when now when I coach and train, I always tell people, listen, you got to find, you know, what's the problem that somebody needs to solve. And if you can find a relevant, urgent problem and tap into that, you're just going to be a whole lot better off than if you're calling somebody just dead cold out of the blue. So, you know, and yes, it was frustrating, but in some ways it was also really exhilarating when, you know, you finally unplugged your head from the sand and figured out something cool that worked and gave yourself a big raise. You know, that part of it was always exciting, and it still is.
Yeah, so I'll share with you something that I've told many people this, probably except a handful. So when I was kind of getting my footing underneath me in my current role, we had a call sheet list, you know, some prospects, some leads, didn't get me anywhere. And so I started thinking, like you thought, who would be the person that could tell me if there is an opportunity that would tell me in ways that the procurement guy, the logistics guy couldn't tell me? And it's the salespeople who are actually selling the products that they're shipping, right? So I called the sales guy and he's like, man, you know, we just signed this new major contract. We got some things going on. It's not a bad idea to contact this person. And so it was a path of least resistance that got me to the person to have the conversation, unbeknownst to them, that I had done a lot of homework on, you know? And so to your point, I mean, it's figuring it out. Once you figure out how the game is played or how the patterns in the system line up, it can give you some advantages. That's pretty cool that to hear you say it the way you said it, as far as doing the homework backwards and figuring out the answer.
Yeah, it's going to be different for every company, and it's going to be different for every salesperson. But the important point is, you know, you got to start by asking the right question.
Right.
You know, when you dig into like who should I be calling, and right, what are the criteria that make somebody a good person for me to be calling? You know, targeted, urgency, applicability, like whatever it is. But if those are the questions that you're asking, you're just much more likely to get to the right answer.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, being on LinkedIn, I'm sure you've seen some of the sales pitches, right? That you get just randomly out of the blue. And it's right. You're right. It doesn't make as big of an impact because they don't have that relationship with you. You're not solving an immediate problem. It's just kind of like throwing a dart in the dark and just hoping it sticks, right? And so I think to your approach, having a specific, okay, these are the people I'm going to target, that's how I'm going to succeed. So that's key. I want our audience to pick up on that. That's great information. Who were some of you, like, as you kind of progressed and started figuring out your niche and everything, who were some of the people that really helped you along the way? So, mentors, just people that, you know, bosses, coworkers, whoever, peers, that really helped you kind of guide you where you needed to be?
I've got a sob story about that, man. Like, I just got no help. Like, my whole career, I just got no help. I was
zero.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, I was either in a really small company or in about 1996, I joined an office that had about 30 people in it. And like, I was not in the top quarter. And that's who the sales manager spent his time with. And, you know, I'm not crying in my milk because, you know, I had already figured out that there's a lot of places I can learn. But I was just always that one of those sales guys who was always reading a book or going to a seminar or trying things out. So, you know, my mentors were people that weren't necessarily in the same room as I was. In 1999, I became the co-founder of a dot-com startup company. And but I was the only person in a sales role. It was like there was the CEO and there was four VPs, right? You know, because the chief and the sub chiefs, and like, you know, eventually we were hundreds of people, but you know, at that time it was five, and I was the only salesperson. I learned a ton from these other people about management and leadership and process and finance and HR, and like, you know, so I wasn't mentor free my entire life, but my first 10 years in sales, it was all just audiobooks and seminars and experimentation. So, you know, Zig Ziglar and Tom Hopkins, you know, those were the guys. I was learning from the best. Just they weren't in the same room as I was.
Well, I think that speaks to one or two things. One, you're probably pretty competitive and you're self-driven. Well, yeah, you are self-driven. And two, that there's always a thirst for learning, right? And especially in sales or any potentially process-driven endeavor, there's always something to learn. There's always something to take and apply and scope your way of thinking in a way that opens new avenues for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I just never understood why, like when I was in that office with 30 people, I just never understood why I was the only one who did that. We were all full commission. And I just always thought of it as like, listen, if I do something smarter, I give myself a raise. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Right.
And a lot of my friends, you know, a lot of my peers, the guys I would go out to lunch with, like, you know, they were doing okay, but they could have been doing better. And it's like, you know, well, how come you're not doing something about that? I didn't understand.
Yeah, it's uncommon to want to challenge yourself any way, shape, or form to be better, right? I mean, I think people who I've identified with always have that thirst for bettering themselves in some form or fashion, and, you know, are having those conversations around bettering themselves and gleaning any information from people that they come in contact with. The other people, they drain you. I mean, because they're always going to be doubting your ability to help yourself. Why are you reading that book? Or why are you doing this? You know, what's the point? Like that's not the conversation you should be having. The conversation should be, how has it helped you? You know, has it helped you? You know, what information can I glean from that? You know, and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's a big differentiator between the, you know, not the have and have nots, but the people who are always self, you know, improving and looking to make the most of their opportunities.
I think a lot of people just get comfortable, you know, especially if you've got people who I would call, you know, in whatever your title is, if the work you do is kind of an account management role, you know, you've got a nice book of business, people are doing repeat orders, you know, and it's comfortable just to keep calling the people that have already bought from you, and calling people who don't know you is less comfortable. So people stick with that. There was this one particular woman, I won't name her name, but she was making big money. This was back in the late 90s. She was making like $300,000 a year in commission. And that was a lot. I mean, it's a lot now, but
it's a lot now. Yeah.
It was a whole lot back then. And 90% of her business came from one particular customer. It was a software company. And one day that company got a new, I don't know what it was, like a VP of procurement, or like, I don't know what the exact role was, but he did an audit and he found out that they were being overcharged significantly in this category, and just boom, she was out.
Shut it off.
Full stop. So she went from $300,000 a year to $30,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not trying to be judgmental, but like, she wouldn't say hi to me in the hallway. And like, I didn't take it personally, like, whatever, you know. She wasn't the only person that didn't say hi to me in the hallway, but she didn't. And, you know, I was not selling a lot, but my trajectory was going up.
Right.
So, you know, people would see the numbers and like, yeah, David's still kind of, you know, near the bottom, but, you know, he's kind of working his way up every month or every quarter. And all of a sudden she started lurking around. I didn't even have an office. I had a cubicle, right? She started lurking around my cubicle a little bit, you know, trying to cozy up to me. And, you know, we never really connected, but like that really stood out to me. That was an early impression in my career. And you can't put all your eggs in one basket, and you have to keep, you know, trying to get better. And you have to keep, you know, going after new business just to keep yourself sharp, if nothing else. And you know, don't, you know, screw your customers.
Right.
That was the other lesson.
Probably the big lesson. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, there's a skill to cold calling. And if you haven't done it in a long time, it can be a daunting task. And so, you know, the prospecting, the qualification, you know, the qualifying leads, you know, that's all something that you have to do on a routine basis, or else you will lose the sharpness and the first shiny flashy thing that comes across your screen, you run after and chase for months on end, and not be anything worthwhile because you haven't sharpened those skills and, you know, on a consistent basis. What do you think the future of sales will look like? You know, what's, you know, we're in the middle of a raging pandemic. Things have changed rapidly. You know, look into your crystal ball. What does the future in sales look like?
You know, it's an interesting question. And I think usually when people ask it, they're asking about, you know, the interaction between the salesperson and the customer. And Honestly, like, I don't know. I mean, I think at a lot of levels, it's pretty much the same as when I started. Obviously, like the tone and the tenor and the pace have all changed, but essentially it's find someone who needs your stuff and, you know, identify yourself as a solution to a problem. Where I see a lot of change happening right now is on the sales management side, and I'm doing a lot more work, you know, with organizations at a higher level, and it's not happening in enough places, but I'm seeing some really, really smart people in really, really effective organizations that are being very deliberate about breaking down silos. And the way that they're doing that is, you know, there's still somebody who has to run each kind of, you know, each silo, as it were, right? There still ought to be somebody in charge of sales and somebody in charge of marketing. But more and more of the companies that I'm seeing that are really doing great work, really providing a great customer experience through and through, are putting somebody on top of everything that touches the customer. So in some organizations, that's kind of limited to sales, marketing, and customer success. Other organizations even expand that out to product and finance. But, you know, it's so you've got one person, and it could be any title, COO, could be a CRO, could be a CEO, could be anybody, right? The title doesn't matter, but one person who's saying, listen, if it touches the customer, then it needs to conform to a specific vision. And I need people underneath me to make that happen in the different, you know, silos, as it were, but they need to work together, because these kind of rocky handoffs between sales and marketing, or the rocky handoff when, you know, somebody signs their contract and all of a sudden they're having a problem with finance or with service or with production, that's not the kind of customer experience that's going to have you winning in the long run. And the smartest companies I see are taking this approach. And I think it's having a great impact on sales, because I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, you never see a product manager getting fired because the company didn't hit their numbers because the product wasn't good. And yeah, that's kind of a funky way of looking at it. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, you know, how can we as an organization make the customer experience great? And if it's just about the ones who directly interact with the customers, we're leaving something off the table.
Well, not only that, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, well, not only that, but there is a power in leveraging all of those contacts, all of those connections across multiple units, right? I mean, there's more than, you know, one person that's being talked to or touched throughout the whole sales cycle or customer buying cycle. So leveraging all those contacts, leveraging all those experiences into one talking point can be powerful in itself.
Absolutely.
Well, and if you look at, I mean, just look at customer service in general, right? We all buy brands based on customer service. At some point, we have bought something because, hey, they have better customer service. I don't want to deal with this other brand. And so I think to your point, Dave, is those companies that have got it right, those are the ones that are on that upward trajectory that you've been talking about, that they want the customer experience to be great all the time, not just at the beginning, not just in the middle, the whole process. So I think that's the difference that, you know, great point that you made.
Well, one of the first kind of, you know, business lessons that I learned when I was selling is this whole concept that it costs a lot more to acquire a new customer than it is to keep an existing customer.
Absolutely.
And I think that when you start lining up your organization very deliberately around that concept, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't go after new business, but let's make sure that the people who we've already gone through that cycle with, who are already buying our stuff and who are already good customers and are putting money in our bank accounts, let's make sure to keep them happy. You know, that's a win for everybody.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Saves you a ton of money, saves you a ton of time. Let me ask you this. So thinking about the sales cycle and what you just said, what would you say as far as like people getting into sales, like right now, we're in a pandemic. It's not probably the best ideal time to jump in and swim, you know, and sell something that maybe a lot of companies are, you know, they're on hold. They're not trying to buy anything right now. They're zero-based budgeting and they're not wanting to do anything because they're trying to see what the market does. So what would you give those people advice on if they're just starting out? Maybe they just graduated. What would you say to those folks?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misperceptions around sales. So I think the first piece of advice is you really ought to make an effort to understand what sales is. You know, if your impressions come from your family members who have ideas about it but haven't really done it, or, you know, God forbid, you know, it's Wolf of Wall Street and Boiler Room that are driving your perceptions, and, you know, or even something not not that archetype. You know, I think a lot of people believe that sales is either about backslapping and telling jokes, or about, you know, being really slick and, you know, delivering a presentation or a fancy line or something like that. You know, I've seen people who do that and who can be good, but I don't think that for most of us these days, that's what sales is. Sales is about communicating. It's about understanding problems. It's about solving problems. It's about being a resource. And so I think really understanding what sales excellence looks like before you decide to jump in is a very, very important pre-step into sales. And then the second thing, you know, I learned this pretty early on, is one of the things that I think is really going to serve salespeople well that many of them don't concentrate on is business acumen. You know, if you want to be effective in sales, you need to be getting into conversations with people and convincing them that you have some idea what you're talking about in the context of their business. And if you don't really have a good feeling for how business in general works, how your sector works, how companies make money, what kind of real issues are facing the people who you're trying to sell to, it's just going to be harder to have a conversation. And underneath that is just curiosity. I think if you're really curious about how things work, you'll build your business acumen. You'll have the right kind of conversations with people because you want to learn what's going on with them. So I think these kinds of mental shifts that don't always happen with people that are new into sales is probably the best thing someone who's just getting into sales right now would probably need to do. At least, you know, those are my top two or three.
That's great information. I mean, and even when I was in sales, a sales role, having, you know, that, like you said, to experiment and find what works and break it down, and those types of things that you mentioned today, I think are going to be very valuable for our audience. Some of the other things you mentioned, obviously, is figuring out what sales is, right? What does excellence look like? You don't want to just jump in because, well, I don't know what else to do. You need to have a focus and target your audience so you can succeed and set yourself up for success. But also the curiosity, like you talked about. If you're not curious about why things work, that sales is probably not the best avenue for you, right? And building customer relationships, that's how you find out things and learn new things that the customer may not have shared with you had you not been curious and asked those questions and not had that business acumen. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with us on the podcast today. Very valuable information for our audience. Obviously a wealth of knowledge in sales and leadership and management. So appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
I appreciate you having me. This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks, David. If you wouldn't mind, give us your podcast a plug, the B2B Sales Podcast. And tell
all yeah, sure. Thanks, man. It's called Driving B2B Sales Revenue, and it's all about driving B2B sales revenue. You can find it on all the normal services, Apple, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or you can go over to my website, davidmassover.com/podcast. And if all else fails, you can find me on LinkedIn, and it's right there in the contact information. I post every day on LinkedIn, and, you know, come on over and leave a comment. I'd love to get into a conversation with you there.
Thanks again to David Massover for sharing his story and dropping a lot of valuable information for our audience today. You can connect with David via LinkedIn. The link to his bio is in the show notes. You can also connect with us via the links in the show notes to our LinkedIn profiles, as well as the Driving Force podcast page. We'd love to get your feedback on the show, so please like, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Give us a rating. Tell us what you think. And as always, thanks for listening. We couldn't do this without you. Remember, you're closer to your destination than where you started. Don't look back. Don't turn back. Keep moving. Keep pushing forward.